The next case of the morning is number 021948, Caracou against the Immigration and Naturalization Service. Mr. Bierman.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Judge Rovner, Judge Ripple, and Judge Wood, opposing counsel. My name is Stephen Bierman. I represent the petitioners Adrian and Najada Chirchitu. This matter comes before the Court on petition for review of the decision of the Board of Immigration Appeals. The Board of Immigration Appeals itself adopted the decision of the immigration judge and for the reasons stated by the immigration judge. So that's the decision that's before the Court. The respondents, husband and wife, the case hangs on the male respondent, the petitioner, forgive me, Your Honor. But Adrian Chirchitu is from a family of longtime opponents to communism. The family spent 50 years, the entire period of communism virtually, in forced labor camps and jails. The persecution was unbelievable and severe. The property of the extended family was confiscated. And even after the communists fell from power in 1990, the mistreatment did not end. The petitioner submitted medical documentation and attempted to submit testimony about what happened after the socialists took over the government. The petitioner, Adrian, was arrested twice and held for periods of time. In the first arrest, when he was at a pro-democracy demonstration, he was beaten so severely that he was unconscious for 2 days, and he was held for an extended period of time and released. The second time he was arrested, he was beaten nearly to death, causing permanent nerve damage, and to this day suffers a speech impediment as a result of the severe beating.
Mr. Bierman, you certainly outline these horrible facts in your brief, but let me ask you what I think is the nub of the government's argument, which is that even though what the immigration judge said he was doing was, in a sense, a voir dire or preliminary review or whatever of the proof that Mr. Chirchitu was going to present, in fact, this was the equivalent of a full hearing, and thus there are no problems either at a statutory level or a due process level. What didn't happen, in your view, that should have happened?
Very simple, Your Honor. The petitioner was never given the chance to sit up on the witness stand and, under questioning by his attorney, tell the court what happened to him. He did not get a hearing on the merits. The judge concluded voir dire, and based on trivial inconsistencies, found that the documents were counterfeit and that the whole case had to be dismissed, even without a trial. This, in my experience, is unheard of. I've never seen anything like it.
How long did this proceeding take?
Your Honor, I was not at the court. I'm representing the petitioner on appeal.
It's not important. I just wondered how.
I don't know, but it is clear that the case did not go to trial. It did not go beyond voir dire. In addition, the petitioner...
He wasn't permitted to have his expert testify, was he?
He was not. That's correct, Your Honor. The case was cut off completely. And incidentally, the expert, Father Frank Kamaj, who is the U.S. State Department expert, the State Department itself uses for the Foreign Service Institute on Albanian Affairs, personally went to Albania and interviewed government officials to verify the details of this particular claim, and he concluded under oath with his reputation on the line that this man is in danger of his life. And so on what basis did the judge decide that all the documents are counterfeit and the case doesn't need to go to trial? This is the basis that the judge himself stated. The petitioner was shown a pile of documents, not in front of him on the witness stand, but in front of his lawyer at the desk. He was asked, "Where did you get that stack of documents?" He said he got it from his brother. It turned out one of the documents, it was dated several months earlier, which also could have come from his brother, but he said, "No, now I remember that one I had asked for myself many months even before I got it. And it really, I didn't get that document in furtherance of an asylum application, I needed it for my own use." Based on that, the judge decided that his testimony was inconsistent, and therefore the document was not inadmissible, it was counterfeit. And this is after the petitioner and the government's attorney agreed that they would be willing to send the document to a forensics document lab to verify it. The judge felt he didn't need to go that far. He testified on that inconsistency, and therefore it's fraudulent, counterfeit, and there's no need even to go to trial. We submit to the court, under the Fifth Amendment Due Process Clause and under the statute 8 U.S.C. 1252, an alien in proceedings, he is entitled to a fair hearing for the fair opportunity to present his case. There's no question about the procedural facts, or there shouldn't be. He was not given the opportunity to present his case. His case appears to be a good case. He has a very strong witness in his favor who went to Albania and verified all the facts, and he said that he's in danger of his life. He should have been given the chance to testify in support of his application. He was not, and this violates the U.S. Constitution and its statutory rights. Are there any questions? Okay, if I may reserve for a rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Berman. Mr. Cunningham.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. Let me begin, if I may, with some basic propositions. One is that an asylum applicant always has the burden of proving that he is, in fact, eligible for asylum.
At a hearing, I presume.
Excuse me?
I mean, the problem with the propositions in your brief is that this man never had his hearing.
I respectfully submit, Your Honor, that he did. Now, let's begin with what the immigration judge had before him when the hearing began. He already had Mr. Kosiku's asylum application, which included a detailed narrative. In that narrative, Mr. Kosiku told a rather strange story. He said that although never having worked for the Democratic Party in Albania at any position higher than a chauffeur and a mechanic, he was nevertheless a political activist of great prominence. He said that after...
Why is that so strange? What was Lech Walesa before he became president of Poland?
Well, Your Honor, Mr. Kosiku said that for 4 years he worked for the foreign ministry. He wasn't a trade union activist. He was a chauffeur and mechanic working for the trade union, working for the foreign ministry. He said that during that four-year period from 1992 to 1996, he had no difficulties with anybody.
But
not with the...
Right, that's when the Democratic Party was in power. The problem is, you talk about a lot of things in your brief, some of which may be true, some of which may not be true, but they were never tested at a hearing. You go into this long account, which we all remember from reading the newspapers, of the collapse of the pyramid schemes in Albania. None of that's in the record. There's no record at all, aside from a couple of things that this immigration judge decided not to believe or decided to find inconsistent in Mr. Kosiku's testimony, which seemed to equate being a member of the Democratic Party with being a member of the Communist Party, and it's very troubling. There's just, forget about the Constitution, there's a statutory right to a hearing.
With respect, Your Honor, there is evidence in the record regarding the events in Albania in 1997. It's the State Department report. It's in the record.
You know, what really troubles me, and it troubles me greatly, is that this particular immigration judge and, I fear the INS has learned nothing from the Padillo case.
I would urge your honors to put yourselves in the shoes of the immigration judge when he had this hearing. He had Mr. Kosiku's narrative attached to his application, which, as I said, told a strange story that after the 1996 elections, he began to attack the Democratic Party, and for that he was threatened by socialists. He then said that in the fall of 1996, his patron, the foreign minister, advised him to leave Albania. The foreign minister wasn't apparently concerned for his own safety, but he was concerned for the safety of Mr. Kosiku.
That's not the least bit unusual in these countries.
All right, Your Honor, I take your word on that. But let's look then at the documents that Mr. Kosiku gave the immigration judge. I urge the court to review these documents closely. They are a series of documents supposedly obtained by Mr. Kusiku from friends or relatives or supporters in Albania. They are odd documents. They are vague. They do not have dates in them. They are even allowing for translation problems, amateurishly written, awkwardly written, and they are not certificates at all of membership in the Democratic Party or employment at the embassy. They are, in fact, pieces of advocacy. They have every hallmark of having been tailored, having been put together to support Mr. Kusiku's asylum application. Even the document that my colleague mentioned, which was the one purportedly testifying to the fact that Mr. Kusiku was employed at the embassy in the Netherlands, says this. It says that he was employed near the embassy. It doesn't state any date when his employment supposedly began, and it goes out of his way to mention his wife. This is not an employment certificate as one is usually accustomed to seeing them. They have every hallmark, these documents, of having been manufactured to support Mr. Kusiku. The immigration judge had these before him when Mr. Kusiku took the witness stand. He had every right, the immigration judge had, to apply common sense in examining these documents and to see whether they are, in fact, fabrications. He examined Mr. Kusiku closely for about 40 minutes, Your Honor. The transcript will show that it's the pages, there's about 40 or 50 pages of this voir dire, allowing for some estimated time per page. It was at least 45 minutes. Mr. Kusiku testified...
How are you figuring the 45 minutes?
There's about 40 or 50 pages of transcript, Your Honor.
So?
I'm guessing a minute per page. Perhaps less, perhaps more, depending on whether you go off the record or not. At the end of the... During that time, Mr. Kusiku testified inconsistently where he got these documents. The one that he said was a certificate from the politically persecuted association in Albania turned out to have been delivered to him by a man named Astrid in Milwaukee. He did not otherwise identify who Mr. Astrid was. He did not explain how Mr. Astrid got the document in the first place. He offered no explanation at all for where he got the certificates purportedly attesting to his medical injuries. My colleague has emphasized those this morning. You will find no explanation in the record from Mr. Kusiku where those documents came from. The documents purportedly representing his membership of the Democratic Party state something that Mr. Kusiku did not claim, which is that he was forced to leave Albania because he was being physically punished in the fall of 1996. None of that is borne out by his own testimony. The immigration judge listened to all of this, examined Mr. Kusiku closely, and at the conclusion of the voir dire, found, and I think he found reasonably, and I think he found based on the nature of the documents themselves and Mr. Kusiku's testimony, that the documents were fabrications. Now, here we have a constitutional question. In his brief before the court, before this court, Mr. Kusiku says, even if those documents were false, I still should have been allowed to testify. So, the question is, does an alien, having put documents before the court that the immigration judge reasonably found were fabrications, have a constitutional right to nevertheless get on the witness stand and testify to the event that the documents purportedly describe?
Was there an offer to submit the documents to the Federal Documents Laboratory for authentication?
My colleague's predecessor, Mr. Hagen, suggested that course, Your Honor, and the immigration judge said, well, what good would that do? Because the only way you can really check whether a document is a fraud is if you have an authentic copy that you can compare them against. And the immigration judge said, we don't have that, so what's the point of doing that?
So if you don't another one for comparison, you can never send anything to the laboratory?
That was the immigration judge's conclusion, Your Honor. I'm not a forensic expert.
Yeah, well, that's pretty bizarre.
I guess the question is, Your Honor, does Mr. Kusiku have a constitutional right? Was that a denial of due process? That's what this case is. It's a constitutional case. Did he have a constitutional right?
He added to all the other facts here, and that's what we might very well conclude.
Your Honor, I believe that the only fact you have before you, the only fact that any of us have before us that we can state with confidence, is that Mr. Kusiku flew here from the Netherlands. Everything else is unproven. Everything else is subject to question. Let me talk briefly about the affidavit from Father Kamaj. We make the point in our brief that In his appeal brief, submitted by my colleague's predecessor, Mr. Hagan, to the board, the only point made with respect to that affidavit was that Father Camage could have testified regarding the authenticity of the documents that the immigration judge turned aside. If you review Father Camage's affidavit, you will see he made no claim regarding the point made in the appellate brief, which was that he worked as a consultant for the Democratic Party when they were in power between 1992 and 1997.
But Mr. Cunningham, is there a requirement in immigration hearings that every word that is later going to be presented in testimony be written down in a document beforehand? Because if there is no such requirement, then the fact that the hearing didn't happen and Father Camage never was able to offer testimony becomes quite significant. Now, if you actually just have to write it all down in advance and then repeat it when you're on the stand, that's different. And maybe we would read something into his failure to mention things. But he probably thought that the time was in the future that he would be filling in the rest of this story.
There is no such requirement that you have to have a direct testimony, a package of direct testimony before you take the witness stand, Your Honor. But the argument before the board was that the immigration judge erred in not allowing Father Camage to testify. Why did he err? Because Father Camage could have gotten on the witness stand and said that I worked as a consultant for the Democratic Party when it was in power between 1992 and 1997. I was an expert as to how the party kept its records, and I could have verified at least the Democratic Party documents that Mr. Kusiku submitted.
Which would already begin undercutting the IJ's notion that virtually everything was phony.
But the board had Father Camage's affidavit before it, and there was no claim in the affidavit. The affidavit is a narrative, and it's set roughly in chronology. If you read it, you'll see that Father Camage made no claim that he was in Albania at any time during that period of time when the Democratic Party was in power. Did the board constitutionally err in failing to say, well, immigration judge, you were wrong, and Father Camage should have been allowed to testify? Mr. Berman now, on appeal, is using Father Camage's affidavit for everything else it said.
But why does being in Albania have anything to do with it? I don't know how much time you've spent in Albania, but here we are discussing it. One can know about what the Democratic Party did, or perhaps they came here, or perhaps they phoned or faxed or emailed. I mean, there are many ways.
He didn't say that.
I didn't know he was supposed to. Why did
Because
he never had his hearing.
Why did the government withdraw its initial objection to the authenticity of the document?
I'm not following you, Your Honor.
My understanding is that the government withdrew its initial objection to the authenticity of the document.
I don't know, Your Honor. I don't. If you have a specific page of the transcript.
Yeah, Record 63.
No, Your Honor. The answer is no, Your Honor. It's a bit unclear, Your Honor, if I may. The government attorney, Ms. Meacham, first says, no, I don't object insofar as I have seen the originals. And the judge says, okay, is there any other concern? Judge, I think this is the first time I've had an opportunity to examine the originals. I would ask for the opportunity to send them to the Federal Documents Lab for analysis. Then there is a discussion between the immigration judge and Mr. Hagan, and apparently the immigration judge then said, well, I have questions of myself, and then they went into the voir dire. I can't speak for Ms. Meacham why she said apparently she was prepared to withdraw her objection. I can't answer that question, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honors. I appreciate the court's attention.
Thank you, Mr. Cunningham. Mr. Berman.
Thank you, Your Honors. Regarding all of the issues raised by opposing counsel, it would appear they all relate to the admissibility of the documents. That's not the question before this court. The question is, did the man have a right to testify in support of his asylum application? Whether or not the judge erred in failing to admit the documents is besides the point. He had a right to present his testimony, and the judge did not give him that right.
When the judge was conducting this voir dire, did Mr. Kirsikou have the opportunity to fill in these various blanks that Mr. Cunningham has identified, like, you know, all these various questions?
Absolutely not. He had to answer the judge's questions. He was not, and his lawyer was not, given the chance simply to present his case and say this is what happened. Moreover, regarding the expert testified that he did travel to Albania and that he did meet with the Democratic Party's, the former Democratic Party's, Minister of the Interior and verified the details of the case. If he would have been able to testify all these facts I verified, it would be very hard for the judge to say that the documents are all counterfeit. Now, while the judge may be able to rule out admissibility of evidence, the judge is not a forensic documents examiner, and the judge cannot leap to the conclusion that the documents are counterfeit when there's so much evidence already in the record to the contrary. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Perlman. Thank you to both counsel. The case is now taken under advisement.